Anderson, supporting IISSV. He's the senior technical architect for the EHR IIS interoperability project, and he's going to explain the transport layer selection process that was part of that project.
While it's loading, thank you to Ruchi and Mona. We are on a different project, not transport. We're actually using MQF, and it's been fantastic for us. We're creating test cases, and when we create those HL7 messages, we need to validate them. We don't have anything. Bounce them against MQF. It's been really helpful.
And Ruchi has asked when they're made up if they could be stored on their system, too, so that they would be sample messages that you could play with.
So we're working on some stuff. We have some feedback form and stuff, so it's been really good. They've been very helpful. The export, the EHR IIS transport layer expert panel project, I am merely the voice. There are people actually in the group here that were on the panel and very helpful in this. What I'm going to talk about today is not necessarily the technical solution or results, but more the process that we went through and the project as a whole. I will, of course, give my shameless plug at the end and talk about what we've come up with. But most of this is around forming the panel, the panel representation that was on there, how we did our kickoff, timelines for these pieces, and how long it took us to get things together for those of you that are maybe looking to pull something like this together. And obviously, a lot of the stuff that we've done was specific to our problem set, so there's some value that you may be able to grab, and there's things in your set that, if you're doing something like this, that may not be as useful. Also going to be talking about the panel process itself, the panel outputs, and the lessons learned, which is a very full slide. We learned a lot during this process and applying a lot of those things actually to our next panels that we are forming. An overview of the project, we kind of have a high-arching piece here that talks about the enhanced interoperability of electronic immunization data exchange between health information systems and immunization information systems, a very high-level goal. This slide was similar to Rob's. I believe we're working off the same slide. I've cut it back and highlighted some stuff which really focuses on what we're going to talk about today. So today we have a problem and a goal set, right? We have a problem that right now people use a bunch of different transport layers to transmit data. EHRs, of course, do not like that. When they go to Frank, they have to use SOAP. When they go to Emily, maybe they have to use POST. They go to Mary Beth, and they have to use something else. It becomes a problem for them because they are now supporting all these different pieces within one EHR. And IIS as a whole are starting to do some pieces where they're doing state-to-state transactions, and finalizing this would be helpful in that arena, too. So the area that we're focusing on is just the single recommended transport layer for the industry to move towards, and I'm going to walk through that process. There is another step here that talks about the technical support and guidance of the documentation to facilitate these grantees through this. That's just getting started. We are getting very close to wrapping up on the end of what's highlighted in the red there. So forming this panel, this actually took quite a while by the project team. I have 3 months there. It probably took a little bit longer than that. In thinking about where we started and really the beginning to when we actually kicked off the project. We did a lot of background research on the transport layers that exist out there, and some of that was done through, you know, just open articles that are out there, what other groups have done. And then one of the other things we did that was helpful was we sent out what we called an IIS fact sheet. It was simply nothing more than an Excel spreadsheet to all of the 20 grantees that are funded on this project. And They were asked to fill it out, and what we did with that was learn what are they doing today from a transport perspective and what do they think they're going to be doing in the future from a transport perspective to help us understand what options are out there and to make sure we're not missing any options. The next one, the strategically defined stakeholder group, was a very important piece for us, and it's been useful not only on this project but other projects. Our project manager put together an Excel spreadsheet that had numerous columns on it, probably more than I can mention. And had all the filtering set up so we could, everybody that was potential volunteer on the project was listed in there, and they were assigned where they come from. Are they academic in history? Are they a grantee? Are they a vendor? Are they technical? Are they programmatic? And that allowed us to really filter and sort and understand what mix of people we have on there. Are they from EHR land? Are they elsewhere? It really allowed us to understand where they're from. And even people that we knew weren't going to be part of the project or organizations that weren't going to be part of the project, we put them in the group and then ruled them out. So that later on, if people asked, what about this group, we can go back and say, oh, we've already made that decision. We've decided that they aren't going to be that helpful in our endeavor. And where that becomes helpful for us is we only had to do that once. So the other three projects that we're running, we can just go back to that and understand that. So by project, we have it broken down as well, and it's really helpful. Then we reached out to volunteers. So within that stakeholder group, we started reaching out to volunteers and asked the volunteers to provide some relevant experience. That relevant experience ended back up into that Excel spreadsheet so we can review that. The volunteers were put into one of two roles. We have subject matter experts, or SMEs, and expert reviewers. The subject matter experts are the core group of, we had about 18 people that were there every week meeting in a volunteer way. So it was phenomenal to see these people show up every week, knowing that they have real jobs too. And then the expert reviewers were there as kind of that layer between, here's what the subject matter experts have come up with, here's the artifacts they've created. We'd like to get it out to the public, but it's really hard to push version 1.0 just out to the public without getting a sense from people. So the expert reviewers were there, not involved in the process, but able to read the documents after the fact. And so they take version 1.0 that the expert reviewer or the SME body is happy with, and they review it. So they've not been privy to all the meetings. So they're reading these documents and saying, do these documents make sense? Are there overlaps? Are there gaps? Are there areas where you just don't know why they're saying something like this, even though it seems important? So they give really good feedback because they're on the outside, yet they are experts in the field. And of course, no volunteers turned away. Never do that. We take everybody and find a role for them. The one thing we did do was within the subject matter experts, we made sure that within one organization, there was only one subject matter expert per organization. So we didn't want, you know, an organization that had three subject matter experts and all of a sudden there's the fear of ganging up on the calls and everything else. There was continued outreach. So there were certain people that we knew we wanted involved in the project. And maybe we didn't hear from them and we know they were important. So we had a couple subtle reminders to them that please come back, we'd really like you on this project. And eventually they saw it our way and came aboard. So here's our panel representation, and it was quite phenomenal once we put it all together, what it was made up of and what they actually are comprised of. So 16 of the 20 funded grantees were involved in this specific project. The ONC, Arian Malik from the Direct Project, was on this. ERA, as Rob had alluded to and what their roles are, was on there. And they're comprised of 90 members, roughly, representing state, regional, local IIS programs, IIS vendors, IIS constituents, reciprocal partners. Really had a lot of value in there, and actually Frank was the representation from ERA on that. And then we reached out to EHRA and got Bob Barker from EHRA, who was phenomenal in the group. And that's representing 45 EHRs that make up a roughly 90% of the installed EHR base. And so that was really helpful to have that buy-in from them. And then Indian Health Services, they track immunizations in 34 states. We absolutely need them on the group to provide input in what's important, what's needed. IIS vendors, we were able to solicit and include four IIS vendors that support 31 IISs as a whole. And then we have a couple EHR vendors that were included in the process, which was very helpful to have the individual insight as well to the EHRs, not only just EHRA as a whole. Project kickoff, this was a very focused two-week effort. We had the initial kickoff, and then we had 2 weeks of two meetings per week, hour and a half each for 2 weeks. So there was four meetings in 2 weeks, an hour and a half each, which was quite a drain, I suspect, on most folks from the volunteer area to pull in. But what we wanted to do was get through our guiding principles, our mission and scope, our business requirements, our potential solutions, nail all of that down so then we can move forward and get that out of the way in a real short, focused area. The guiding principles were important for the group just to kind of agree on, and I won't touch on all of them. There was about four really important ones, which the group all agreed on, is that if you're talking, make sure your suggestions are important, which are moving the group forward. Let's stay focused and within scope. We encourage everyone to ask clarifying questions. If something is not clear, make sure we clarify that. And the last one, the most important one, which those have been in Mural before, have seen this before, but consensus. Everything is consensus-based. Everybody has to buy into it. But just having the term consensus there isn't enough. We have to give a definition to it. And we've given the definition of I can live with that and support it, which is a very simple sentence, but it has meaning. So the I can live with it means you have no serious objections. You may not completely agree with the solution, but you can live with that. You can see the point of view, and you have no serious objections. And the second half of that sentence, and support it, is also very important, meaning not only do I buy into it when I'm talking to other people out in the community or I'm implementing something, I'm going to support that decision and move forward with that. So it's a really neat way to get people to move forward. You find ways to move forward on that without digging into the finer details and arguing about little semantics. The mission scope and terminology were defined early on, and it's very helpful to define those so that you can look back at those and really help yourself understand where we are in the grander picture. Terminology was an important one for us. We got stuck on terms like batch and real time and talked about those for quite some time and eventually threw those terms out and created new terms. I think we turned batch and real time away and came up with three new terms. So we threw two and green three. But it made real good sense for our group. Business requirements and use cases, this is what our measuring stick was, comparing the transport layers that were potentially out there. And then finally, we agreed on potential solutions that were out there. So from that IIS fact sheet that I talked about before, we grabbed those and looked at those, and then the group kind of took just a straw vote on what should be in, what should be out. And quickly, we got rid of one. There was five options out there. We got rid of one, which was secure FTP. And that's not to say secure FTP shouldn't be used. You all know within your environment there's places where it can be used and it's very successful. It's a matter of should this be the national one, and everybody said, you know, it just doesn't, just looking at it, doesn't meet all of the business requirements and use cases that we came up with. So now we have four potential solutions. And we are going into what we call the expert panel subgroups. So we had these four potential solutions, and each potential solution became a subgroup. And the potential solutions that we had, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time in this, this is really into the technical details, were HTTP, SOAP, FinMS, which, and I have a slide next detailing these a little bit, and the Direct project. So we have the four groups. We divided the group into subgroups, and we actually just assigned the groups as a project team. So when you say project team, that's myself, Stuart, a couple other folks that are on the project, and then the panel are the volunteers, and that's kind of the two terms we've been using. And they were assigned by us intentionally, so within each group we had an expert, and we also had a devil's advocate. It worked well to keep people fact-finding. So the mission here is to do research and compare the transport against the business requirements, compare the transport against the use cases, find out where there's pros, find out where there's cons. We're not making a decision here. We're doing research at this point. These were weekly one-and-a-half-hour meetings. So each group, each subgroup had their own meeting. So they had to come to a meeting once a week. Project team had four meetings a week. And what we did for the project team was, and this has been very helpful in moving forward with other groups, is we come with initial draft language. So we don't necessarily say that this is the language we should be using or we're completely right, but it allows us to start the conversation. It allows the panelists to react to it, which in a teleconference setting is very helpful. Having just a blank page on a teleconference is very tough. So coming with what we call coming with meat for them to react to is very helpful for both us and them, and it allows us to improve it. This was 4 weeks. We anticipated it to take about 3 weeks. We allotted four as a kind of a cleanup week at the end to review the entire body of work, and that was a hard stop because the next week we transitioned into our in-person. I want to talk just a second about the possible transport layer options. So I mentioned there was four of them. HTTP, everyone's probably familiar with. This is the foundational transport used by websites, and there's some neat things you can do with that within a RESTful architecture or an HTTP post. Which is something IISs have been doing for a while. And then there's SOAP, and you can do SOAP-based web services over HTTP. You can do it over SMTP. You can do it over a few different transports, but we were talking about SOAP over HTTP. And that essentially adds a basic messaging framework upon which web services can be built. So there's a lot more you can do with SOAP. You can get as complex as you want. But from a simple standpoint, it takes HTTP and just adds a little bit of framework to it. FinMS, or EBXML, we stuck to FinMS because that's what, from an IIS perspective, that's what we know. There's been implementations of that. And FinMS was developed by the CDC and uses the EBXML infrastructure. And then finally, the Direct project, as most of you are probably familiar with, is basically a project that defined the use of secure health email through SMTP and SMIME. And SMTP is the transport behind email. SMIME allows you to secure it. So those are the four that we worked on. So the in-person was a three-day session, and all subject matter experts were in attendance. And the agenda and goals were to review the recommendations. So remember, we were split into four groups. So there was only the HTTP group only knew about HTTP. They were not aware of what was going on with SOAP, EBXML. So we had to bring everybody up and educate everybody and do a review at that level. So we walked through each one. Everybody got their half day, I believe. And we walked through those pieces that allowed everybody to improve the document even further. So those that weren't on HTTP but had comments about HTTP were allowed to solicit those and improve the document. And then we wanted to reach a consensus recommendation. And it was quite interesting because the project team was hoping to reach consensus by the end of the 3-day, and we kept telling ourselves, if we don't reach it, it's not a failure. It's a step into what we have to do next. Kind of setting ourselves up, not sure what was all going to take place, but that was our goal. And kind of a hidden lesson learned that's not even on the slide is the value of the in-person, the value of bringing people together face-to-face, the value of going out to eat on a Monday night as a full group and having conversations. And that was the most valuable piece. And actually, we were able to reach consensus by the end of day two, which was really good. We took just a simple vote. I think we had 5 people that did not vote for SOAP, at which point we asked if there was any serious objections or if you were in the consensus of I can live with that and support it, and everybody was. So it was very helpful in that case. The next day, the very last day, we defined the next steps, started getting rolling on the next pieces, so we actually had time to build some framework and our recommendation documents, our implementation documents, and really get that momentum going after the in-person. I also have lessons learned at the end, but I have some specific lessons learned for the in-person. And certainly someone that does facilitation techniques and everything else probably would have some really good pieces too. We actually picked these up from someone, and they helped a lot. The solicit feedback during the process, at the end of day one, we asked every person on the panel, what went well today and what can be improved? And it was one of those questions as a project team you don't want to ask, but you do. And it was really good. We improved a lot in from day one to day two. And some of the improvements were, please bring coffee. which we listened to. The project team listened, and we brought coffee. But other ones were really good about, you know, I think we're wasting time on our review and how we're pulling things together. If we speed it up this way, we can get through everything the same way, and still add value. So there was areas where we gained pieces or gained time, which allowed us to condense and get to that consensus at the end of day one. So panel members always have really good feedback being on the outside of the process. And global issues was an important one for us. There were issues that would come up, denial of service attacks. You know, denial of service attacks might hit you if you're doing SMTP. Well, it might hit you if you're doing HTTP too, and across the line. And so rather than waste time talking about those and how that is a pro or a con or how that fits in, you know, even some of the global issues, and maybe issues isn't the right word, but some of the pros were across the board, that there wasn't any difference between them. So it was helpful to just say, you know what, that's a global issue. We had a board up there. Put it on the board, and it's done with. And we note that in our recommendation document. These are issues across the board. There's no need to belabor the point. And eventually, we ended up choosing SOAP over the HTTP transport. It was very close in between SOAP and actual HTTP REST or POST. And really, what we ended up with was some simple differentiators that help us decide. And a lot of this is based on the group as a whole, what we came up with. SOAP allowed us the best chance for broad adoption. And what we meant by that was that it's widely used already in the EHR community. It's not a big add if implemented correctly for the IISs. And it gives a few different pieces in there from within SOAP, you have a real, from a technical perspective, you have a real natural language specific syntax for the developers. You don't feel like you're going out to the web. It's a function call, it's a method call, it's a whatever you want to call it from a Java.NET world, whatever those methods are. It allows a machine-readable contract, which is the WSDL, that allows the sender and receiver to agree on here's what I'm sending, here's the format I'm sending in, here's the data elements I'm sending, here's the possible exceptions that could occur that could come back to you, whether that's authentication, authorization, the message is too large. And we're just about finalizing and finalizing all of those. And there are several IIS that already have a SOAP interface up and running, so that was helpful. Now, we finish the in-person, and everybody's got consensus. We're there. It's now been 4 months and counting, and we're still working. So it's amazing when you feel like you've reached that point that we've got success because we're all able to agree on it, that you think, boy, I just about have this finished, and now we're still working on a lot of these pieces, and not due to any other issue than trying to get it right, trying to move it forward, and trying to be the documents that are going to be the most helpful for the end community. So the deliverables that we've have that are coming out of this is a transport layer recommendation document that talks about the decision that was made. So how did we come to the decision of SOAP? And then the second half of that is SOAP specification and developer's guide. How do we implement that and have a standardized WSDL that we talked about, that machine-readable contract? If everybody can use the same one, then we should all be able to communicate with each other. So the recommendation document went through, you know, based on our research and finding, like I talked about, it went through the review cycles with the SMEs. This is where the expert panel, the expert reviewers come in. And the expert reviewers review the artifacts that were created by the SME body. And eventually we published version 1.0, and I think, Stuart, when that was. I know it was probably a couple months ago that we actually published version 1.0.
May?
I think. Yeah. May-ish. And it's on the CDC website. And then the SOAP specification developer's guide that's really in progress right now. We've got all of the SMEs have defined all of the pieces. We've got consensus on all of our approach, so we're pulling that together right now, and that will also end up on the CDC website eventually. And then there's also a formal specification that was put together. So one is more web-based coding samples, developer guides, you know, lessons learned, case studies, really kind of nice little things that developers probably want to dig into and see, because often as a developer, and I was one, so I can say this, we don't read specifications. We don't want to read that long document. We just want the short answer. So that's there's two different ways to look at that. And then lastly, after this, will be kind of the technical consultation and feedback. So we have an email address that people can send emails to on this project for technical consultation that we're just starting to roll out. Lessons learned. Screen your panel members. We did not have any problems at all with our panel members, not a single one. Everybody's been phenomenal. But I feel like, and we've started doing this for our other projects, we could have put them in better roles potentially had we understood them better. And Fred Grant did all of our screening for the next panels that we've been doing, and it's been very helpful. We have a very simple 30-minute process that allows us to get a really good insight on the people and what their role is, what their history is. Have the in-person session as early as possible, but at a juncture that provides maximum value. As I said, the teleconference calls weren't lacking before the in-person, but after the in-person, everybody knows who they're talking to. They can visualize the person. The communication that happens afterwards on a teleconference is really good, and that's where the value of the in-person is, I think, is the teleconference is after the fact, along with what you get done in the in-person is a lot. Allow open feedback from panelists on areas of improvement. Oftentimes, panelists give feedback, and this actually talks way down lower about my listen to feedback. So it's one thing to have allow open feedback and not listen to it. If you allow open feedback from your panelists, make sure you listen to it and find areas of improvement. Encourage participation in teleconference meetings. This was a technique that Fred kind of helped us with in asking folks to read a definition. It gets them talking on the teleconference. So Fred just called somebody out. Frank, can you read the definition for this? And it allowed Frank to talk. Now he's talked on the teleconference. It's just a little technique that helps on teleconferences to get people to start talking. Visual attendance tracking in teleconference meetings is helpful. Show where people are bad, but it does help when you bring that up and say, okay, who's all here today, and you check that off, and you kind of have that onus upon the attenders to show up. Put all options on the table, and that is a subtle way of saying thank you, Noam. we originally did not put all the options on the table, and Noam gave us a subtle nudge to say, hey, you guys are missing one here. Let's make sure this gets on the table and we consider it and talk about it. And it was probably one of the better decisions that we've put on. So, again, that one feeds back into allow open feedback and listen to that feedback, because we certainly did listen to Noam on that. Balance between planning and solutions, and this is a project team one. As I mentioned, we try to come with every meeting with a filled, detailed agenda that people can react to. Be open to the fact that that's not the solution that allows you to facilitate the meeting, and the panel members are the experts that are going to improve that or change that. It's one first stab at it to improve to get it moving. And that feeds into the next one, which is reaction-based teleconferences. Coming with that allows people to see something, know what they don't like, react to it, and tell you that. And look for asynchronous communication opportunities. Particularly early on, a lot of people aren't open to talking on the teleconferences. And some people are very good at email and reviewing documents and providing feedback in that way. So if you can find a way to give a subtle homework during the week and provide opportunities for asynchronous communication, that helps people bring in. And then which sometimes feeds into the next meeting for them to present their piece, so that now you have an encouragement in your meeting. Listen to feedback I talked about. And the last one is forward-looking. Often we hear comments that are, no, that's out of scope. But that out-of-scope item is an opportunity for the future. So those out-of-scope items are very helpful to getting opportunities for future work and where we can add on. So that's been helpful. But that's all I have for today. I know a lot of these are not earth-shattering, but they were enlightening to us as we were going through them. And it's just some of the obvious things sometimes that help you move forward. And any other questions?
For Rob or Eric,
we have about
6 minutes.
Oh, I should have kept talking. Yes? So from the first thing we did was ask the grantees, because it was a grantee-funded project, and asked them, provide us with people that you would like to participate on the panel, including vendors. So that first list was built from the grantee list, and the vendor had to be active in one of those states, whether it be IIS or EHR. So in some cases, it was problematic because there were some people that we wanted but weren't able to, based on the way the contract was written and such. And then from an EHR perspective, we looked at both ONC certified and recommended by the grantee. So that intersection was our pool to pick from. Yeah.
Curious, and you don't have to name names. There were four grantees that didn't participate in this. Can you give us some sense of why they weren't able to participate?
So there was, and I don't even know which four they are. The way the grant is written, and this is probably more into contracts than what you might understand, but they have to participate. We have three projects that are funded. They have to participate in one. So if they didn't have, if they didn't have an expert in that area, they have to participate in another one. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so the biggest problem we ran into with the HIEs was the varying numbers of them and the different tax they're taking. One of the things we focused on was EHR to IIS, but in the solution we also, and in the recommendation document, I think it says a lot of that, we acknowledge that it's not limited to EHR and IIS. I mean, certainly there's HIEs that are coming into play that will be doing some of this. There are, potentially other areas that maybe wanted to interface outside of EHR. So it wasn't an intentional exclusion. It was an area the biggest problem we had was keeping that number of the SME body to 18. And 18 is a lot to manage even. So, yeah. But, yeah, that should be useful. And I think it was Emily had one. And then I'll go back to. Can I use the very soon answer?
Exactly.
In computeries, that would be real soon now.
We're pulling a lot of that stuff from the wiki, and she's familiar with the wiki, and pulling that into the CDC website. As of actually last night, Nathan Bunker has had what we're doing is getting together a working model of this, so actually EHRs and IISs. Nathan got it working last night. And then George Cole from the EHR side is getting some of that. So some of that stuff will lead into our coding samples and stuff. Now, it's going to take some time because we have web services to work with at CDC to make sure that we get all of that in and go through reviews. So I'm sure it'll be a little bit. Oh, okay. That formal specification document is pretty close, and it wouldn't be all of it, but that would be at least a formal specification.
Right,
as soon
as that one is done,
right.
When we say it's done, then, you could share even before it goes up on the web. So that should be very soon, and really very soon. And not just CDC speak.
Yeah, really, yes. really.
Exactly.
Let me know, Emily,
honestly,
what's your timeline? I'm assuming if you're saying end of the year, it's already crunch time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. Well, push us. Yes. I was going to go right here at first, and then I'll hop back. Yeah, Sue.
I noticed that in one of your earlier slides, you did have the direct in there.
Yes.
And I haven't seen it since, but I do know that a lot of places are not really registry, you know, connected or anything like that are looking for that as a way to get the means to use.
Right. Yeah.
So what is the status of that piece?
Use it. Absolutely use direct if you find use for it. Yeah. The one thing that we found as when we challenged ourselves was not only meaningful use stage one, but forward looking. And we know at some point query and response is going to be in there. And we know in a lot of settings that needs to be real time. And that was the one hang up that we found, and I don't use hang up as a negative word, but that was the one scenario that was really problematic for us in direct. There were a number of places, and in the recommendation document, there were a number of places where direct is acknowledged in there and where it can be useful. So that we not only did we say SOAP is a good solution, we actually talked about the other ones and acknowledged where it could be useful within the IIS setting. So there's some stuff in that recommendation
document.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And we probably have time for one more question, if there is one.
Ken had a question.
I was going to ask a similar question. I thought that ONC and CDC were looking toward direct as a transport mechanism. So I was going to ask, you kind of answered it, why so? Not that I personally think one is better than the other, but I just thought the organization was leaning toward direct as a transport.
No, certainly don't look at this as an ONC statement. This was our project that looked at that. And even if you look at the direct project's initial charge, was that small dock to small dock push, directed push. And in a lot of cases within immunizations, we have a lot of immunizations that are already successful beyond that small dock to small dock push. And I know at some point they're going, and Noam, you're fairly active in direct, and maybe you can answer a bit of that too, but they are challenging themselves with a phase two, I believe, right?
The user story in direct related to immunization was just submission. So the tension is that IIS projects are trying to be more forward-thinking and are focused a good bit on enabling this bi-directional. So that's really the limitation, I guess, is the word.
There you go. That's a better word.
The limitation of direct is that it really is a one-way protocol. So it's not that CDC and ONC are out of sync on this, really. It's just that ONC is very much focused on stage one, meaning meaningful use, somewhat narrowly, and the IIS community in thinking about technologies for the present and soon coming future are looking a little more aggressively at what might be used.
It's good for a Medicare provider, an adult provider that doesn't provide a lot of shots, to submit their Pneumovax and stuff like that, which is not a high volume, nor does it require that much interaction, because once you give the Pneumovax, pretty much once and done.
Yeah.
So it has a sort of niche role for a lot of providers.
Exactly.
That prior to H1N1 had no connection.
Yeah, we actually had a couple of brainstorming ideas about the other direction where IIS could use direct outgoing, which was interesting. So school vaccine forms that need to be filled out, send it to the parents ahead of time so you don't have to get called.
IIS could use direct to send a message back,
yeah.
But it's a much more loosely coupled return than a web services query and response, which is a very tightly coupled thing to look at is how an HIE as a single point of contact for an IIS project could potentially provide, even through web services, though the IIS doesn't need to do anything, that sort of transport protocol translation. So let the HIE deal with direct and all of that crap. Let them give you one pipe back, even if that's web services. Most HIEs are capable of that kind of translation. So that's something to start to lay the groundwork for now if you're an IIS project and you don't want to deal with direct, but you want to give your HIE a good reason to deal with direct for you.
Anything else? Any final?
Thank you, everybody.
And I think this is a great example of how the community of practice out there works with each other. I mean, even in this discussion right here with Noam and Eric, this is exactly the kind of stuff we'd like to see. And it happens. So thank you.
Thank you.